Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello, I'm Andrew McDermott. Scientists know that our universe had a beginning and is finely tuned for life. But is it unique, or just one of countless other universes? Today I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Alston, an electrical engineer with Picatinny Arsenal and a former NASA Special Projects Engineer. He received his PhD in electrical engineering from North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University. Dr. Alston is co-author of a new book from Discovery Institute Press called Evolution and Intelligent Design in a Nutshell, which takes a close yet accessible look at the latest scientific evidence from the smallest cell to the farthest reaches of the universe to reveal the full story of life's origin and development. Robert, thanks for joining us today.
Hello, Andrew. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, tell us how you got involved in this book project and what your chapter focuses on.
Oh, absolutely. It's at the Summer Seminar for Intelligent Design. A few years back when I was in graduate school, I reached out to the great Stephen Meyer. I messaged him and told him how much of a fan of his work I was. And he asked for my physical address, and he told me that he would send me a book. And he said I should apply for the summer seminars. So within a week or two, I received a signed copy of Signature in the Cell from Steve Meyer. I was so happy. My wife would tell you I cried when I got that book. And I applied for the summer seminar, but I actually was not accepted into it. And it was for great reasons, because years later, I heard that Stephen Meyer was doing another presentation in Seattle. So my wife and I flew to Seattle and we went to see Stephen Meyer and told him again how much of a fan of his work I was. And he said, hey, you should apply to the summer seminar. I said, I already have, and I didn't get accepted. He said, you should apply again. And I applied and I got accepted for the 2017 summer seminar cohort. And when I went there, I was just so happy to meet all these other great, smart, fantastic people who enjoyed intelligent design. And I overheard Thomas Lowe speaking of the need for a book that spoke in layman's terms about these amazing topics that we were learning about in this summer seminar. So my ears perked up and I told him any way that I could be a part of this book, count me in. And that was the beginning. So after the summer seminar was over, we talked and discussed, well, who should get this chapter? What about this? What about that? And I was given the fine tuning and the origins of the universe, such a heavy and wonderful topic to receive, to condense and to speak in layman's terms. And I wrote of how the universe came into existence as we know it, and how it was not infinite in time and space, but that it actually had an origin, a beginning in time, and how the very constants and laws of nature seem to be fine-tuned for the promotion and stability of life.
Yeah, the summer seminars are great for learning within the intelligent design community and networking. I'm sure glad you were a part of that. So you got to be part of this book project. They said, here, you do the origin of the universe. Go. That's a baptism by fire, but you've done a great job condensing the story and the main elements. Let's talk about fine-tuning for a moment. You know, for any listeners new to the issue, can you give us a quick layperson-friendly definition of what's widely known in physics and cosmology as the fine-tuning problem?
Absolutely, Andrew. I have a problem with the word problem.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been baffled by that term being there. So just to give a background on fine-tuning, it's try to imagine that we're all in a theater, right? Where just people, you're sitting in a theater in a seat and you're looking up at the stage and the lights dim and some performers are about to come on stage. And some amazing performers perform for us as we're sitting in the theater. Well, imagine that those performers are the laws and the forces and the constants of nature, like gravity and electromagnetic force and strong nuclear force, all these amazing things taking place in nature. And we're sitting back in the theater in awe of what we see. And it looks amazing. And then imagine that you can pull the curtain back and you see that all the performers function the way they do off of these dials that are finely tuned to a specific narrow region. They have been set there for each one of the constants or the performers for the theater that we're in. And if I were to get up out of my seat and go on stage and were to try to change some of those dials, I would be restricted to do so because those dials have been set to values that allow for every person in the living in the universe to exist. If those values, for instance, if gravity were changed to one part in 10 to the 60, if that were changed even just slightly, life would not be permitted in the universe. So what we see is that the laws of nature and the constants seem to be fine-tuned to support the existence of life. Now, for some, they consider that to be a problem, which is why you see fine-tuning problem. I believe that the reason why is that they come into science incorrectly. So I believe that as a scientist, we are to explore the truth in nature. You simply put your biases aside and explore the truth in nature. But when I bring my biases in and I say, for instance, I want to explain all of nature only by what I see, then if anything that I find in nature seems to be opposing my bias that I bring in, well, I would consider that to be a problem. I would have to find a solution to that problem. But just as in the discovery of gravity or electromagnetism or any of the particles or subatomic particles, quarks, or all, we discover these truths that are in nature and we should sit back and be in awe of it instead of considering them to be a problem. The only way they would be considered a problem, in my opinion, is if it goes against some kind of bias that we're introducing into our exploration.
So it's only really a problem if you're trying to marry that fine-tuning with your materialistic assumptions about science and the universe.
Right.
Okay. What was your first reaction when you came across this whole concept of fine-tuning?
Well, when I was 16 years old, I believed that I encountered the whom I believe to be the intelligent designer, which I believe to be Jesus Christ. So when I discovered Jesus, it was around the time I was going to college and I had to decide, am I going to go to ministry or am I going to go in for sciences? It was only going to be one or the other. I ended up choosing the sciences. And when I went to school for engineering for applied sciences, I just grew more and more in love with physics and chemistry and all of the sciences. Well, at the same time, I was studying the intelligent designer and I was growing more and more in love with them. When I approached my senior year in undergrad, I came across my first book that was a proponent of intelligent design called The Case for the Creator. It literally blew my mind. A bridge formed between my love for the sciences and my love for the intelligent designer. And all of a sudden, I was just catapulted into the world of fine-tuning and intelligent design. And it has swept me away in the current. Every day, I'm in awe when I look out at nature and I see how it just shows and points to an intelligent designer so clearly.
And as we'll see here in a few minutes and in your chapter, you have to really work hard to explain that away. Can you give us a few examples of fine-tuning that really blow your mind?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'd already mentioned gravity. In the book, you'll see what we mentioned, a few strong nuclear force. You just change that by a little, just 0.4%, just a small amount. You go increase, you decrease, you affect the formation of oxygen and carbon in the stars, which would have tremendous effect on life and prevent life from taking place. Even the expansion rate of the universe, a cosmological constant, which drives the expansion rate of the universe. Fine-tuned to the tiniest degree of 10 to the 120. I mean, it's really hard to fathom, but to see it in nature and to see how amazingly low the probability is of that taking place really encourages the proponents of fine-tuning and an intelligent designer.
The story of the discovery that the universe had a beginning is a pretty awesome one. I've personally been working closely with Stephen Meyer on his latest book, which takes a big chunk of that book and devotes it to the fascinating discovery of the Big Bang. Of all the figures involved in that story, Einstein, Hubble, Lemaître, Penzias, Wilson, Leavitt, who is your favorite and why?
I mean, you just named some of the most amazing scientists that we can encounter in our history books. You know, some of my top physicists were Paul Dirac, Richard Feynman, Sir Isaac Newton, of course. But to me, the one who stands leaps and bounds above everyone else to me is Einstein. You gotta give a standing ovation to Einstein for the amazing work that he was able to do and his ability to peer into the very laws of nature with his courage to hold fast to the mathematics with one hand while with the other hand holding on to the coattail of science and really bringing it all together into a real world explanation of what we see in gravity, time, and light. I mean, its contributions are still being affected even in what we're discovering today. So to me, I would have to choose Einstein over and over again.
Yeah, good choice. And even though he fudged his numbers at one point to try to marry what he was discovering with those materialistic assumptions, he was quick to he eventually came around to reality and kind of gave in there. But what an amazing man, an amazing scientist, one of many involved in that story. Well, your chapter provides a quick flyover of the multiverse theories, which are meant to explain away the fine-tuning of our universe without considering an intelligent designer. Briefly, what are your thoughts on the multiverse argument?
Just to very quickly give that little bit of background, the idea is that it's not just our universe, but there are many universes, not just tens of universes, hundreds, thousands, millions, billions, trillions, just infinite number of universes with varying values for the constants of their natures. And what that does is that increases the chance that you would come across a universe with the constants and values that we see that promote life. In my opinion, there are two main things that stand out about that I cannot marry. I cannot sleep well with at night. One is that it seems to be introducing metaphysics. And I could be wrong on the matter, but the idea of going beyond our universe and being able to identify other universes, to me, even the suggestion of that, I'm very surprised that people will go to such lengths to try to explain away the fine tuning and what they consider it to be a problem. So not only trying to peer outside of our universe, but then also what's generating all of these universes with the varying constants. We know that our universe is not infinite in time, you know, infinite in space. It's expanding. It hasn't been here forever. So then that means that there's some kind of mechanism or machine that's creating these universes, right? And they all have these different values. But what about that mechanism? That certainly has to be fine-tuned for the creation of universes and the one that we're in today. To me, it requires a lot of faith, more faith than it is, to my opinion, to believe in an intelligent designer.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of majestic math involved in these multiverse theories, you know, and then you get into string theory and it just takes you so far. I mean, you talk about Boltzmann brains and just all this crazy stuff where you almost have to check your rational observational thinking at the door and just leave it behind with some of these things. But as Steve Meyer is fond of saying, you know, math is grand at describing things like the laws of nature, but it doesn't create things. You know, it doesn't design things itself. There's got to be that mechanism, like you're saying. Well, do you believe that fine-tuning provides a powerful argument for an intelligent designer?
I certainly do. I believe that when you look at it, you can't help but say, there seems to be some kind of intelligence that's beyond what we experience in this universe that formed and created everything that we see. If we were to go back to the theater experience that I mentioned, if we were to go back to that, you know, sitting in the theater and you look behind the curtain and you see all these dials and they're all restricted to a very narrow window or narrow range. Where did those dials come from? How is it that those constants received the values that they did, and they're all so work together so cohesively to support life? Sit in an armchair in front of a fire and just think about that. And all arrows would point to an intelligent designer being beyond what we see in our natural space and time.
Yeah, sometimes the simplest explanation is the one, right? And, you know, intelligent design isn't by any means simple across the board, but it's Occam's razor. You know, it's about how many things you have to subscribe to just to go with your theory and how many things you got to conjure up and explain away, you know. Sometimes I wish I could just sit down with folks like you and just have this hour, 2 hour discussion about this, because you get to tease out stuff. So maybe in the future we'll have some long form discussions. It's hard to fit it into 15 minutes. But then again, you did take part in writing a book about condensing these into a nutshell.
And that would be so great to be able to sit and talk about it more. But we certainly do encourage anyone who is listening to go ahead and get the book and get some and give some to others. And really what we want is for the layman, you know, the average person getting up and going to work and coming home who isn't really deep into the technical aspects of these, to just sit and see what we see in nature without any biases. So we certainly encourage people to go out and get the book, Evolution and Intelligent Design in a Nutshell.
Absolutely. It's available at Amazon, other online retailers. If it's more episodes of this show you want, you can find them at idthefuture.com or basically anywhere podcasts are listened to today. And if you do enjoy today's episode, consider posting a positive rating and writing a favorable review of the show. This will help new listeners find us and discover for themselves the compelling evidence of design in life and the universe, and it will allow them to be part of this healthy, open-minded debate over evolution. As we're seeing, especially today in society, when you shut down the conversation, when you say, no, this is the way you ought to think, you know, there's not much room in there to find the truth and cling to it. So this open-minded debate is something we're all proud to be a part of, and we encourage you to as well. Anyway, thank you for your support. That's very much appreciated. Robert, thank you for your time and your contribution to the book.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
For ID the Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.